This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 5th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 202. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Hostage Michael Kovrig's former punk bandmates in Hungary want the Canadian freed from jail in China. Singer Balázs Zsikárdi joins me from Budapest to talk about their song, Plane to Toronto. Plus, Troy Clifford, the head of BC's Ambulance Paramedics Union, joins me to talk about the impacts of the anti-vaccine protests around BC hospitals. And Conservative candidate Kaylin Chi in Vancouver Granville joins me to talk about the Liberal condo flipping scandal. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or it is the silliest of silly season? And I don't just mean an unnecessary election that is bound to have a record low voting rate amid the fourth wave of the pandemic. Just look at the silliness around us in Vancouver. Vaccine passports are coming, but the provincial government is cutting back the number of mass vaccination sites. The most famous real estate flipper in BC is a Trudeau Liberal candidate. Talib Nurmuhammad was flipping condos near Olympics venues while he worked as a vice president with Vancouver 2010. It's the summer of coyotes attacking humans at Stanley Park. You've probably heard the knee-jerk reaction, shoot them all. So why are four-legged predators running wild in the jewel of Vancouver? It's an easy equation. There's more abandoned rabbits making baby rabbits. There's more rats making baby rats. There's more people coming to the park, bringing more food, buying more food, and leaving more garbage. There is an easy solution. Remove that garbage as soon as possible, and fine the humans that are being careless with their food and food scraps. Students are returning to the University of British Columbia campus after a year of classes by computer. Last weekend, a driver of a Mustang went down the stairs near Brock Hall. Oops. It's not the first time that's happened. Evidently, someone in an important job on Point Grey is not paying attention and is not finding an easy solution, such as the old barrier and sign combination. I know that there is a place where people can go to learn how to design and engineer and build roads and make safe urban spaces. It starts with the letter U. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Meng Wanzhou waits for a judge in Vancouver to decide whether she will be sent to the United States to face fraud charges. Until then, the Huawei chief financial officer lives under bail conditions in her luxury mansion. She is free to visit local beauty salons, high-end handbag boutiques, or gourmet restaurants during the daytime with her court-appointed chauffeur and bodyguards. But across the Pacific Ocean in China, Canadians Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor have been held hostage for 1,000 days and counting in retaliation for Meng's December 2018 arrest at Vancouver International Airport. The Chinese government has not shown any evidence to back up spying charges against the two Michaels. They were tried in secret, while diplomats and journalists waited outside in the cold. Few people have heard the voices of the two most famous Canadian Michaels. Here is a rare recording from 1999 when Michael Kovrig was the singer of a punk rock band in Budapest, Hungary called Bankrupt. This is their song called Listen.
Through the
That was Michael Kovrig on vocals for Bankrupt from the We're Not Generation X compilation released in 1999 by GC Records. Fast forward to 2021. Kovrig's former bandmates have joined the movement to free the two Michaels. Here is an excerpt from Bankrupt's song and video called Plane to Toronto. My guest on the Breaker.News podcast is Bankrupt bassist and singer Balazs Sarkadi, also known as Rocco.
Tell us about being a friend and bandmate of Michael Kovrig for those years from 1996 to 1999.
Michael came to Hungary in the 90s because he's of Hungarian origin. His father was born in Hungary and the family left in 1950, escaping communism. And he was interested in the country and the culture, and we were looking for a native English speaker singer at the time because we were singing in English and we wanted to sound authentic. And there were quite a few native English speakers coming to Hungary because it was like the new frontier, this whole Eastern Bloc that opened after the change of systems. And we ran an advertisement in the papers, and Michael answered, and he was a good match for us because he liked the same punk rock bands that we were into, and also on a personal level, we became friends, and He's very knowledgeable about pop culture in general. So he introduced us to a lot of bands that were not that known at the time in Hungary. And he also lent me all these books, like the Johnny Rotten book or Lester Bangs book. And he was a great influence on me. I mean, he really introduced me to a lot of great bands. And then the band started, we wrote songs, we started playing gigs around Hungary, and we recorded some demos. I remember he showed us the Pixies and also like some more obscure British bands like Wire. So I also got to know NoFX through Michael because he used to work for a local English language weekly paper called Budapest Week, and there was a Vans Warped Tour gig set up in Hungary for the first time. I think it was 98, and they got some promo CDs by NoFX and MXPX, and I think some of the other bands that played that tour. And he asked me to write a short article about this concert, and that's how I got to know NoFX. So that was also through Michael.
Kovrig pursued university studies and a career, but continued to stay in touch with his former band and even returned to Budapest to play with them.
In 2017, when we just had a gig at the same time when he was visiting Budapest, and he just came on stage, and we played this song called Listen that I mentioned that we have a recording of on the American label, and it turned out quite good. I mean, he sang the song like you know, all those years never happened, never passed, and it was a really nice experience. And I remember I told him at the when we finished the song, I told him jokingly that maybe you should move back to Hungary and change your career. But of course that never happened, but it was a nice moment. And then we talked a lot after that show at the there was a bar over the concert room, and he talked about his new job, because he just started working for the International Crisis Group that year. And when he left, I mean it was a really nice experience to talk to him, and we had no idea that this would be the last time for a long time, because next year it was 2018 December that he was kidnapped basically by the Chinese state.
What was the reaction when you found on the news, when you heard the news that he had been arrested, basically kidnapped, held hostage?
It was so surreal, so I just couldn't believe it. And I had this feeling that this is just a misunderstanding, this thing should resolve, they would let him go in a few days maybe, and then you know, days pass, then weeks, then months, then years, and all the way we were hoping that there would be a solution, because this whole issue is so absurd. I mean what Meng Wanzhou is charged with is a basically a business related crime that is usually the company gets punished for. This, so the company has to pay a fine, but now they are going after the executive. But we don't think that it's worth ruining the lives of innocent people. I mean, these two guys have spent 1,000 days under very bad circumstances in this tiny cell, and they cannot go out. They haven't breathed fresh air during this whole time. So we were pretty much upset about this whole story, and when this March there was the trial, and that was really a turning point when I really started to have a really bad feeling that this may end really bad if nothing happens. I was reading the news every day. I was Googling his name, and I was reading what's going on, and after a while this song was born, The Plane to Toronto, and I wanted to catch that moment when he's finally released and he gets on the plane and he's going home, and I wanted to sort of send some positive energy out there that this is going to happen, and if we are singing about this, and then somehow we are letting this happen sooner. And then we also released this song because we wanted to raise awareness of his situation, because a lot of people haven't heard about it, especially in Hungary. Because Michael is also a Hungarian citizen. He's got Hungarian citizenship as well. And now we got a lot of coverage for the song. And a lot of people got interested in this story. And I think that probably the Chinese also noticed that that it's becoming an issue in Hungary as well. And this may have some impact on what they decide to I mean their next move, what their next move could be, really our goal was to get the news out to as many people as possible, and we really think that the more people hear about it, the bigger the pressure will be on politicians to solve this. It's going to become even more inconvenient for them that there is still no solution, and finally they should do something to end this.
The song references major moments in the outside world that Michael Kovrig has missed, such as Donald Trump's fall from power, the Capitol siege, the Hong Kong police crackdown on the pro-democracy movement. Michael Kovrig is a pawn in a bigger geopolitical struggle between the United States and China.
He's really the kind of person who I think he went to China to improve the relations between China and the West. I mean, this crisis group is an organization that is working on de-escalating international conflicts. And this is really the irony of fate that now he's becoming entangled in a conflict himself. Because if it wasn't him sitting in that cell, then he would be probably working on getting that guy out right now. And it's so sad that this is happening to him. And I mean, he's requesting books to read in his cell, so he really wants to keep up with what's going on. But I mean, the information he can get is filtered by the guards and the censors or whoever read his mails to family and filter out whatever they don't deem appropriate.
Do you know if anyone has written him a letter, if his family has told him about the song yet?
When I wrote this song, I only had a demo first, and I contacted Michael's sister Ariana about it, because I wanted to get her approval. I only wanted to come forward with this song if it was okay with the family, and Ariana said she liked it, and she encouraged us to go ahead with the song, and she also told us that she would include the lyrics of the song in her next letter to Michael that I think she already sent that. And and of course he cannot listen to the song yet, but he can read the lyrics, and I think that as an avid music fan, he should be impressed that now there's a song about him. And I really hope that very soon he will have the chance to listen to it as well.
That was Balázs Sárkady of the band Bankrupt. You can check out the band's music, including the single Plane to Toronto, online at their website, which is bankrupt.hu. Ironically, as a Canadian with Hungarian background languishes in jail in China, Hungary's far-right-wing ruler, Viktor Orbán, is one of the rare Western leaders who has welcomed Huawei with open arms, despite the tech giant being a key part of the Chinese Communist Party's surveillance state.
Time, I know you'll be on the plane to Toronto. best to steal a nice place just to be the psycho in no time.
The images were shocking. On September 1st, more than 1,000 people protested outside Vancouver General Hospital. It was part of a nationwide march around hospitals by a coalition of anti-vaccine and anti-mask groups to protest vaccine passports. Frontline medical workers and patients were affected. Some appointments for cancer patients were canceled. There was even a clip of an ambulance that was delayed by the crowd, trying to safely navigate around the protesters. My guest is Troy Clifford, the president of the Ambulance Paramedics of British Columbia. I asked him for his reaction.
You know, we're also sensitive to the rights of being part of Canada, that we have the right to protest and express our views on things. But, you know, it's really tough on paramedics and dispatchers when it affects our ability to treat our patients or for patient care. Because we know every minute is critical in critical interventions. And if we're delayed unnecessarily accessing a patient or getting a patient to hospital, that could have detrimental effects on our patient care, and that worries us. But it also worries us when you see the images of that ambulance going through a crowd of people, the safety that provides you know, for the protesters, but also the paramedics. And then you think of that patient in the ambulance that's maybe going through a medical emergency. I don't know obviously what that situation was yesterday or the ones trying to access, but you know, when you're taking somebody to the hospital, they're obviously needing care. And when you add anxiety or pressure of a situation like that on a patient, that's not helpful to their conditions, and as a general statement, I'd say. So all those pressures, and then the paramedic trying to drive and navigate through a crowd, you know, it wasn't a hostile crowd as we've seen in other protests, but definitely you got to be extra attentive to address to make sure that something doesn't happen and you ended up dealing with another emergency situation. So, you know, it's a thing for paramedics. They're struggling. And, you know, and one of the things I've said to a couple other people is that, you know, the majority of paramedics have experienced significant impacts of COVID, seen it firsthand. So when they see situations that, you know, they've seen people die, they've seen people, families affected by COVID firsthand. And that's tough for them to reconcile. You know, and that's why, as a general rule, we've taken a statement of we support vaccinations. We know the evidence-based science. You know, we're medical professionals, but we're also public safety professionals. And we've taken the stand that we support vaccinations. And the evidence shows that vaccinated people are less susceptible to getting COVID. And if they do get it, they will have it demonstrated that they've had less their impacts of it. But, you know, the evidence that we're being advised of is that patients that are in the hospital and the most recent infections are definitely, majority of them are patients or people that are not vaccinated. So science is a driver of our research and our evidence-based care that paramedics provide to patients. And I think that's generally how most paramedics feel. Obviously, we have some amongst our ranks, like any other profession, that feel differently. But as a rule, our advocacy is for patient safety, patient conditions, but also paramedic safety. And we support what the government and the experts and the science is saying. And we're going to have to move ahead on that to protect everybody.
That was my guest, Troy Clifford, from the Ambulance Paramedics of British Columbia. Just a few weeks ago, Liberal Talib Nur Muhammad was a shoo-in to succeed independent Jody Wilson-Raybould in Vancouver Granville in the September 20th election. Housing critic Rohana Rizal revealed that Nur Muhammad owns multiple properties. The NDP released a list that shows Nur Muhammad made nearly $5 million in gross profits buying and selling 46 residential properties since 2002. At a news conference on August 30th, NDP challenger Anjali Appadurai said that it's not illegal, but it should be.
I don't think that someone who's engaged in a predatory practice like that should be striving to represent the people of this riding in the middle of a housing crisis.
The Breaker.News revealed that Nur Muhammad bought and sold at least 4 condos near downtown Vancouver Olympic venues while Nur Muhammad worked as a vice president of the Vancouver 2010 Olympic and Paralympic Organizing Committee. Did Nur Muhammad follow conflict of interest policies and procedures inside VANOC? He has not responded to interview requests. I spoke with Conservative candidate Kaylin Chi.
Bob, I think the public deserves to know the truth and to know and understand whether or not their candidate, the Liberal candidate for Vancouver Granville, is a professional speculator and house flipper in BC, and whose actions may have contributed directly to Canada's housing crisis. And the public also deserves to know the truth, whether or not he was forthcoming in these sales, and whether or not he claimed principal residence exemption on these sales. And lastly, you know, I think the public deserves to know whether the candidate has breached any of his ethical duties while he was flipping these houses in or around the time he was part of the Vancouver Olympic Committee. Well, I think ultimately he's bound by whatever his legal obligations are with respect to his role. But like I said, I think the public deserves to know the truth and to understand the character of a candidate who is running for public office. And quite frankly, the Liberal Party should, you know, feel embarrassed. Over the last 6 years, they have consistently said one thing and done another. And the discovery of this 42, you know, house flips by a Liberal candidate are consistent with the Liberals' style of governance. It's really the epitome of hypocrisy. And, you know, in the last 6 years, the Liberal Party has not only failed to solve the housing crisis, they've made it worse. Housing prices have only gone up during their time in government.
That was Kaylin Chi, the Conservative candidate in Vancouver Granville for the September 20th federal election.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
Morning, Richard Warnicka from the Toronto Star. You've promised a suite of things to make housing more affordable in this election, including penalties for house flipping. But in Vancouver, you're running a candidate who has bought and sold, I believe it's 21 properties within a year of buying them since 2005. Why should people in the GTA or elsewhere take you seriously on housing affordability if in what is arguably the most overheated housing market in the world, you're running a literal house flipper?
I think Canadians have seen over the past number of years how seriously we as a government have taken the housing crisis. I mean, 2015, when we took over, the Conservative government had removed any engagement by the federal government into housing. They didn't see it as a federal issue. We disagreed, and quite frankly, Canadians disagreed when they elected us to office in 2015. And in 2016, stronger actions of the future, and all of our candidates stand by that vision.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In ABC News Australia, COVID-19 vaccine swap with UK adds 4 million Pfizer doses to Australia's supplies. A vaccine deal with the UK will double Australia's supply of Pfizer doses this month. The deal will get 4 million Pfizer doses to the states more than a month ahead of schedule. The government predicts the country will be able to reopen sooner thanks to the deal. Earlier, Singapore agreed to send 500,000 doses that were set to expire. In the Taiwan news, Chinese censorship. Media creator substitutes hemorrhoids outbreak for plague. Players of the Chinese role-playing mobile game Entwined Love Across Time posted screenshots ridiculing in-game dialogue that showed characters discussing the aftermath of a hemorrhoids outbreak. A user claiming to be the creator of the game replied that because censors forbid any mention of the word plague, he had replaced the word with hemorrhoids. Meanwhile, China's TV, radio, and film regulator has banned TV stations and internet platforms from broadcasting so-called idol talent shows and demanding that all media showing quote-unquote effeminate boys be canceled completely.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland Mayor's new communications director quits after 1 week on the job. Lennox Wisely, whose reality TV production credits include Little People, Big World, The Millionaire Matchmaker, and The Great Food Truck Race, started August 23rd, but was done by August 30th. Wisely's sole week on the job was spent working from home in California. Her first day began less than 24 hours after a sprawling, bloody street brawl between far-right activists and Antifa protesters. Wisely said that the highly charged political environment surrounding City Hall went beyond expectations. She was the third communications director in a year. On Cairo 7, Washington State Department of Agriculture staff destroys first Asian giant hornet nest of 2021. The nest was found in the base of a dead alder tree in a rural area east of Blaine, that's about a quarter mile from the Canadian border. Staff vacuumed 113 worker hornets. WSDA's work to trap Asian giant hornets will continue through the end of November.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the workers of British Columbia. It's Labor Day on September 5th for the 127th time. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 5th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 5th in 1945, 3 days after World War II, Igor Guzenko defected from the Soviet embassy in Ottawa, and the Cold War began? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.